er ook staan. Dat is jullie daar op 2000.
Ah ja.
Good evening. Very welcome to this press conference on G8, G20. In presence of the President of the European Council, Mr. Herman Van Rompuy, and the President of the Commission, Mr. Barroso, I first give the floor to Mr. Van Rompuy.
Good evening. Let me briefly indicate the main messages that we will deliver at our G8 partners tomorrow in Muskoka. The main issue will be the global economy. Our key words are growth, confidence, and medium term. The global recovery is progressing better than previously anticipated, although at different speeds, and the growth outlook has improved. The European Union and the euro area have taken bold decisions in the last 2 months, reflecting our determination to ensure the stability of the euro area. The euro in itself is a currency with strong fundamentals, balance of payments almost in equilibrium, and during 10 years, more than 10 years, a very low inflation rate. For the Union, securing strong and sustainable growth remains a priority. We are working to have a coordinated and differentiated exit from the extraordinary fiscal stimulus provided over the past couple of years. As a consequence, the overall fiscal stance for the euro area remains neutral in 2010 and slightly restrictive in 2011. And we are accompanying this with a strong commitment to restoring fiscal sustainability over the medium term, as well as structural reforms in support of competitiveness, growth, and employment. In this context, we recently approved in the European Council of Heads of States and of Heads of Governments our agenda for structural reforms, the so-called EU 2020 strategy. In the EU, we are also giving the priority to growth-friendly budgetary consolidation strategies, mainly focused on expenditure restraint and on increasing the growth potential. The restoring of confidence in budgetary policies go hand in hand with effective growth strategies. This is also the way to restore confidence in the stability of the euro. The reform of financial markets is also one of the central elements in our reform strategy. We are acting in the Union to ensure the soundness and stability of the European financial system. In this context, the results of the ongoing stress tests for the EU biggest banks will be disclosed in July. Confidence in the banking sector is also key. The Union has agreed to introduce a system of levies and taxes on financial institutions to ensure fair burden sharing and to set incentives to contain systemic risk. We are in favor of an international approach on these issues to ensure a worldwide level playing field and would strongly advocate its position at the G8 and the G20. We want also to explore and develop the introduction of a global financial transaction tax. The second important issue will be the outreach session with our African partners. We will send a strong signal to them that the EU is serious about our development commitments. EU-Africa partnership is a priority for us. I will insist particularly on the Union's commitment to peace and security in Africa. We will continue to support African efforts with three concrete actions: capacity building, cooperation to fight security threats, in particular terrorism, and disarmament of small and light weapons. During the G8 dinner, we will discuss a third key item, global governance. I've made this a priority for the post-Lisbon period and have also scheduled the first ever European Council dedicated to this strategic issue for September. We need a collective reflection on the Union's relations with strategic partners, how to engage better and how to engage more on different levels, bilaterally, multilaterally, collectively. My view, our strategic partnerships have to be based on a balance of mutual advantages and commitments. Benefits from the networks of globalization must be accompanied by a sense of responsible ownership and an investment into their functioning. It cannot be that some countries are benefiting of international trade, but at the same time, rules on investment and intellectual property are manipulated. And finally, we will have a morning session on Saturday devoted to international security issues. I will inform our G8 partners about our deep concerns related to Iran's nuclear program and about the guidance the European Council gave to the foreign ministers on additional measures against Iran. We will also talk about the EU's position in the Middle East, in particular in the situation in Gaza and the situation in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We expect to take position on developments in the Korean Peninsula. Well, that's our program for tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. Thank you.
Mr. Barroso.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm very pleased to arrive here in Canada for these two very important summits. We had the opportunity recently to welcome Prime Minister Harper in Brussels for the European Union-Canada summit. I'd like to thank Canada for the impressive preparatory work for these two important summits, the G8 and G20. These meetings come indeed at a crucial and challenging time for the world economy and also for the most vulnerable on our planet. And the European Union's message for our two summits here in Canada is clear. We must not allow the resolve for global coordinated action to weaken. We must rebuild confidence and the conditions for sustainable growth. And we must deliver on our promises to the world's poor. Some words before on the G8. I welcome the refocused G8 format, fully complementary to the G20 leaders' process, which we have established in Pittsburgh as the premier forum for international economic cooperation. For the G8, 2010 must be a year of delivery and inclusiveness. The world cannot thrive on imbalances, be it macroeconomic imbalances or other kinds of imbalances. Sustained action is needed to bring the poorest and most vulnerable nations on board. I was in Gleneagles in 2005, 5 years ago, and in fact, we have to say that today we have not yet reached all the commitments in terms of MDGs. In yet another 5 years, 2005, we'll have the target date for the Millennium Development Goals. If you want to be successful, we have to speed our work. We'll continue to push this agenda at the summits in the United Nations high-level meeting on the MDGs later this year. As you know, the European Union is the world's first donor, providing around 58% of development aid worldwide. Last year, 49 billion euros, more or less 63 billion US dollars, and it means almost 100 euro per every European citizen. I'm very proud that the European Union's 1 billion euro food facility, which I announced at the 2008 summit in Japan, has resulted already in 222 projects and has benefited 50 million people in poor countries. More than 500 million euro are already disbursed. Most of the money is already committed. We pledged and we delivered. In Muskoka, we'll support a strong focus of the G8 chair on development. All G8 members are increasing their accountability and transparency through a comprehensive accountability report. I'd like to see a strong signal by G8 leaders on how to speed up the pace towards achieving those MDGs, where progress is lagging behind. We are strongly supporting action on maternal and child health and the contribution of the European Union and its member states to Canada's initiative will be substantial. The G8 summit must also send a positive message of support for the UN climate change negotiations. 6 months before the Cancun conference, the G8 must show that we remain committed to this process. The European Union is implementing its ambitious 20% reduction targets and remains ready to move to 30% if others make equivalent efforts. We have recently demonstrated that this is achievable. We'll also stand by our commitment to assist others. The European Union has committed to make available 7.2 billion euros of fast start funding from 2010-2012. Some words on the G20. As you know, the G20 played a crucial role in reacting to the economic and financial crisis. And now we should be acting to get us out of the crisis and towards sustainable growth. Europe is coming to the two summits here in Canada, calling on its major global partners to do what it takes to rebuild confidence in the global economy. Confidence is necessary to generate growth. Confidence is necessary to create jobs. Confidence is necessary to foster lasting prosperity. Europe is rebuilding confidence through major stability and fiscal consolidation efforts combined with structural reforms. These are necessary. Europe has given major fiscal stimulus between 2008 and 2010. In fact, we can estimate that stimulus at 4.6% of GDP of Europe, including, of course, our strong automatic stabilizers. This was indispensable. This was above the effort of most of our partners. But now Europe has agreed the time has come to start implementing exit strategies. They will be gradual. They will be differentiated. They will be growth-friendly. They will take into account, of course, the fiscal space of each country. This will not be a drastic change overnight, but there is no room for more deficit spending. The past few months have shown us that the risk is elsewhere. Without fiscal consolidation, we spend our way into a new crisis, and we don't want that kind of crisis. But fiscal tightening is not an end in itself. It's a way to restore confidence, and of course, it should be accompanied by growth. And that's what we have been doing now, launching our strategy, the Europe 2020 strategy for growth and reforms. And that's why it's very important to look at the new sources of growth, including in Europe, the deepening of the internal market, and outside Europe also trade. Trade is a very important way of giving an impulse to growth. That's why the conclusion of Doha Development Round would be a significant source of growth and provide cost-free stimulus to our economies. We are keen to see the G20 to drive a proactive agenda on trade. Our meeting must go beyond simply reaffirming the intention to conclude the round. We should mandate our ministers to work for concrete progress. I hope that in Seoul we could take stock of this progress. So these are some of the points that the European Union will bring to what we believe can be a very important moment here in Canada. Frankly speaking, we have a great opportunity with the G20. There are some global political goods, global public goods, that member states, even the bigger countries in the world, cannot achieve alone. We can only deliver by global governance, from development to trade, from financial stability to energy security. And in fact, when we launched this G20 process, there was hope. Hope that this time it was for serious, that we could have agreed at global level some common general rules, for instance, in terms of financial regulation and supervision. I think it is very important that here in Canada we show that this momentum is not going to be lost. I hope that this is the case, that we will not lose the momentum for global governance.
Thank you. There is room for some questions. Yes.
Ben Nimmo from DPA. Two questions, if I may. On fiscal consolidation, this is for both presidents. In your joint letter ahead of the G20, you targeted 2011 as the latest date by which fiscal consolidation should start. How vital is it for you that the entire G20 should buy into that date of next year as the start of consolidation? And on climate change, I guess this would be for President Barroso. You mentioned the importance of Cancun this year, but a lot of the focus for a final deal is already shifting to South Africa next year. So are you concerned that we're losing momentum? We built up momentum in L'Aquila for Copenhagen. Are you concerned that we're now losing it again? Thank you.
Starting probably this last question. Look, frankly speaking, after Copenhagen, there was some disappointment. We all know that. So we have to manage that disappointment. But I think we should build on the achievements, because there were some important achievements in Copenhagen. It was for the first time that there was a kind of a global agreement, not so ambitious as we in Europe would have liked, but that was the first time there was indeed a global agreement on the fight against climate change. That is why, in fact, for Cancun, we expect progress frankly speaking, we don't expect in Cancun to have the global legally binding agreement with all parties on board. I think no one is really expecting that. But we are working, in fact, also with the Mexican chair of that conference to achieve concrete, important progress. I think finance could be one of it, but also some areas like the deforestation and other specific areas where we are working with our major partners to achieve important progress in Cancun. Regarding the first question, it's important to note, because I think outside Europe many people don't know that, that the budgets in Europe this year will still be expansionary. 2010, we are still in an expansionary phase of our budget. So the fiscal stimulus is still there. Of course, less than what happened in the last year. But what we are suggesting for Europe, in fact, what was already agreed at European level, was to start the exit strategy, and 2011 should be, of course, that date. Regarding the rest of the world, we are not suggesting that everybody does the same at the same time. Of course not. The situations are different. The United States, China, emerging economies have different situations. But we believe that it is important to coordinate that effort, certainly. And we believe that the effort of Europe should be recognized as a very important effort for global stability, to address the debt problems, the sovereign debt in some of our member states. By the way, our overall debt position is less important than the one of some of our partners. If you consider the euro area as such, our debt level and our deficit level is lower than our main partners. But it is true that in some countries we have some problems of sovereign debt. That's why there was such an impressive and, let's say, effort, an unprecedented effort of mobilizing these important amounts of money to act first for Greece and also now a European mechanism in case of need for others if it is necessary. So for Europe, we have said what we believe we have to do, and we are working with our partners to coordinate, of course, their efforts, understanding that situations are very, very different in other parts of the world.
Just one word adding to what Mr. Morso said, and I agree completely what he said. I think timing is important and the pace is important. Timing is important for fiscal consolidation. That's why we will really start with decreasing our budget deficits, really start on average in 2011. Some countries earlier, of course, those countries with big problems in Greece, in Spain, in Portugal, will make huge efforts already in 2010. In Greece, you know, it is an effort of 4 points in one year and 10 points overall. So the timing is important and the pace is important. And most of the countries had stability plans. They are implementing their own stability plans, year after year, decreasing budget deficits. And I think for taxpayers, for citizens in general, it is very important that they have a perspective. The time frame is not so important, but that you have an objective and that year after year you meet the target. So people get confidence again that those deficits will not end in higher taxes to decrease the deficits or to eliminate the deficits. So again, confidence is a key word in all this. So our strategy for Europe is, I think, an intelligent strategy. We start at the moment that there is, again, positive economic growth. We start with the fiscal consolidation, and we do it in a gradual way, step by step, so that confidence can grow. Otherwise, if people are losing confidence, they are starting precautionary savings, and that hampers growth. Really, that hampers growth. So we have a mix of Keynesian and Ricardian approach.
Another question? Yes, sir.
Peter Ehrlich, Financial Times Deutschland. President Barroso, you mentioned the Millennium Development Goals. If we talk here, I'm here since yesterday with the NGOs, they are fearing that the G8 will retract from the pledges they made in Gleneagles. So, will there be in the final declaration a reply of this, a repeat of this Millennium Development Goals and the concrete amounts of money that were pledged in 2005? Not.
I frankly, I don't expect now to retreat from the commitments made in Gleneagles, but I think there should be an honest assessment that we are not on time now in terms of the intermediate target for 2010. This is the reality, and we should be completely honest about it. Now, as you know, the United Nations target is 2015, so we can still achieve that target, and that's why I think we should recommit to this. So we should see in which ways we can speed our work in that matter. The Canadian initiative on some specific MDGs, namely maternal health and child mortality, are important. And so that enables us to focus on some concrete targets. At the same time, I think we can also welcome the fact that now we have created this kind of accountability report. So a kind of obligation that, based on transparency, all the members of the G8 will deliver publicly the information about what they are doing. So the public can compare and can check if, in fact, the promises are being fulfilled. Recently, I was in Addis Ababa with the African Union, and in a meeting between the European Commission and the African Union Commission, and that was one of the points made by our African friends. The point that sometimes they don't see the implementation on time of those measures. Of course, it's true that also on their side sometimes there are some delays, let's put it frankly. But I think it is important to not only to make the pledges, but to be sure afterwards that the pledges are going to be implemented.
I was very proud that as a Belgian Prime Minister, I succeeded to have the 0.7% in 2010. Very difficult budgetary situations. For once, we are an example.
Still questions left? Yes?
Hello, Jeffrey Smith from Dow Jones. Question, if Europe's deficit problems aren't as bad as some of its partners in the G20, why does it have to start reducing them before the others do? I mean, to me, it seems it can only be interpreted as a sign of no confidence in Europe's institutions, the fact that the markets aren't willing to finance European deficits any longer, but they're still willing to finance American and Japanese ones. And given the reform of the Eurozone governance that you just embarked on now, are you not concerned that you're going to have to spend the next three or four G20 meetings explaining to your partners exactly what progress you're making on those reforms?
But we are not starting fiscal consolidation because we couldn't finance our deficits. That had nothing to do with that. We start fiscal consolidation because our citizens, our taxpayers, when they see rising budget deficits, they lose confidence. They lose confidence, and as I said, They lose confidence, they start to save, certainly in the situation of aging populations, one of the big problems in Europe. So it is not a matter of confidence in our currency or a financing problem of the deficits. It is in order to save in the longer term, in the medium term, economic growth, and because otherwise, if we don't undertake that action decreasing fiscal deficits, then we will really suffer from low and slow economic growth. That's the main reason. That nothing to do with the reasons you evoked.
But no, the markets have told you this year that they're not going to finance the Greek deficit. Well,
that is for one particular country. Okay. I'm speaking for the Eurozone as a whole and for the Union as a whole. For one country, there was, at a certain moment, a problem. And they asked for financial support. And they asked for financial support, and we provided a safety net of 110 billion euros, with, of course, a strong conditionality that have to decrease our budget deficit with about 10 points. But that is for that country. And then we asked also, because there were, well, there are other weaker economies in the Eurozone, different of Greece, that they accelerate, that they accelerate their fiscal consolidation, which they did. Spain did it, and Portugal. All the other countries are implementing their stability plans they had already introduced.
All the same, it's not just Greek bonds that the ECB is holding now. It's 50 billion bought in the last 6 weeks.
No, it's not just Greece's. No, no. Your question was, why do you decrease your deficits? That is my answer.
Now, a general point I'd like to make, because I think you also touched that point, is the following. You have to make the distinction between the overall position of the euro area and some specific situations. What I said in my introductory remarks is perfectly true. If you take the euro area as a whole, the overall debt is lower than some of our main partners. More concretely, lower than the debt of the United States or the debt of Japan. Much lower, indeed. And the deficit as well. The average deficit is lower. So the question is, how is it possible that there are so many questions around regarding the situation of debt in Europe? And the answer, the honest answer, is the following. Is that for the first time, we had this issue of sovereign debt in some of our member states inside a monetary union. It was the first time we had this problem. And frankly speaking, we were not institutionally ready to face it. That is not in the current treaties. Clear answer for this. That's why it was, I think, impressive, the efforts made by European leaders and European institutions to come with these very important packages that President Van Rompuy just mentioned, showing our determination to solve this problem, not only for Greece, what was already agreed, 110 billion euros, a part of it, 30 billion from the IMF, but most of it coming from the European Union, but also the mechanism that is now prepared for any problem that may happen. With the contribution of IMF, it's $1 trillion. It's a very credible mechanism, I think. So, and at the same time, the European Union is now taking measures in terms of governance to make that message to the markets. Probably the markets were not familiar with the way the European Union works. Probably the markets were not familiar also with this huge effort. Probably the markets were not familiar also with the overall situation and the determination of the European Union and the euro area to respond to any attack to the euro. And I think this is the message now the markets are getting. A complete determination, political, economical, and financial, of all the leaders in Europe to do whatever it takes to assure financial stability. And they are doing it putting money on the table. They are doing it making fiscal consolidation. They are doing it now promoting the structural reforms they sometimes ago were not possible, to be very frank. But if you look at the structural reforms that were announced in the last, let's say, weeks from some of our most important economies in Europe, you see that determination. This is the message that the markets are now getting. It is true that there was some moment of perplexity, but I think it is also fair to recognize that there has been a very strong response at all levels, economically, financially, institutionally, from the European Union institutions and from the European member states.
Last question, lady.
Janela Massa from CTV News. Just a bit on that topic. President Obama has said that Europe's cost-cutting measures could stall the economy and its recovery. And what do you agree with that statement?
But we answered already twice on that question. Growth is really key in what we are doing. And that's why, first of all, we have a structural program for economic growth, what we call the European Union 2020 program. Second, there will be a new surveillance mechanism. We will create a new surveillance mechanism inside the European Union, inside the euro, to monitor and to survey competitiveness. And that will help a lot, because in order to save your competitiveness, you have to undertake reforms in the labor market, reforms in the product market, retirement age, and in a lot of countries, those reforms are going on. Three, Fiscal consolidation, as I said, fiscal consolidation is not in the first place for the most of the countries because they have financing problems. Fiscal consolidation is because they want to safeguard medium-term economic growth. And three, when we undertake cuts in the budget, we give the priority to expenditure cuts. That's the most growth-friendly cuts you can have in order to raise taxes, certainly on labor. So in all what we are doing, there is an aspect of saving as much as possible and enhancing as much as possible economic growth.
Thank you for your attention.